welcome to this week's edition of Kitchen's Corner, your RMU home for NFL debate and analysis. It's been several weeks since we've been on the air, thanks to Thanksgiving break and more scheduling conflicts, because growing up and becoming an adult is something that takes a lot of time during our senior year. But for the second to last time this semester, I'm your host, Dan Kitchen. Sitting across from me is my loyal partner and wearer of the Hockey Valley t-shirt, Joe Peterson. And Joe, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's good to be back. We're finally back in the booth after some long-awaited weeks, but we're ready to hit some fun debate and analysis-type questions, and we got some good games to recap and some good news.
Oh, we have some very good games to recap. We are still on a Seattle Seahawks embargo as per the request of my co-host, because we talked about them every week to start the season. So we will not be discussing the very good game they played this week against the Steelers, or be picking their game against Minnesota later on. A little surprised Joe didn't want to pick his Vikings, but we'll
I'm still on the embargo train. Granted, yes, they play the Vikings. I'm sick of talking about the Seahawks.
All right, and we are going to go ahead and avoid them. Then we're going to go to two other teams we've talked about all season, the New England Patriots and the Denver Broncos. And that game was a great one. We watched it in our apartment along with most of what we're going to talk about this week. And the Patriots ended up finally dropping their first game of the season, losing in overtime on a C.J. Anderson touchdown run with some very poor tackling from the Patriots.
Yes.
Now, New England obviously was the undefeated team coming into this game. Denver was rocking with a quarterback who hadn't seen much action after they benched Peyton Manning due to injury and just excessive bad play. And Brock Osweiler came out and he knocked off who many thought would be the best team in football and a serious candidate to go undefeated on the season. So we're going to stick with Osweiler and the Broncos and ask, is this a fluke for them, or are they the real thing?
You know, honestly, I've been thinking about this question most of the day since you proposed it to us on our you know, warm-up notes. And for me, Dan, I'm not ready to totally believe in Brock Osweiler. I think this might be a fluke. In my opinion, I'm going to say yes. I don't discredit the kid. I think he did a fantastic job stepping in for Peyton Manning. There were some big shoes to fill. I thought he looked great, but at the same time, I just didn't think New England looked great defensively. I didn't think that New England, you know, had the cues that they needed to win this game. Very similar numbers here by these quarterbacks, except Brady obviously throwing more touchdowns, throwing three. Osweiler only throwing one, and Brady with no interceptions, but Brock Osweiler with a interception. But same completions and attempts. But for me, I'm just not ready to believe in Brock Osweiler. Not yet. I don't want to get on that train and say he's like the next greatest quarterback. I haven't seen anything out of him that blows me away. I thought he made some great plays. I thought he got pressured pretty badly by the defense up front a few plays, but all in all, I thought he took some good hits, and I thought he showed some great poise, but I don't think I'm ready to believe in Brock Osweiler. I'm going to call this one a fluke. I think New England had this. There were some questionable calls that New England fans, I'm sure, are a little upset about.
We'll get to that later. Don't worry.
Just a quick preview for all the listeners, but there were some questionable things that happened in this game, but looking at it, you know, on paper, it's back and forth, but for me, I'm going to say this is a fluke.
I'm going to agree with you entirely and say that I don't believe in Brock Osweiler right now. And I think it was New England playing down, a few calls going Denver's way, and then C.J. Anderson finally deciding he was going to play like an NFL player this season after letting so many down this year in Denver. But I'm going to go with Denver. They had a good game, and as always, their defense is going to be the best in the NFL and still going to keep them in games. And Brock Osweiler had a better week where he was efficient and managed the game well, and if not for C.J. Anderson stepping up and New England's defense falling down, this game could have gone either way, and I'm going to go ahead and say it's a fluke, and I don't think Denver is a serious playoff threat just yet, which probably predicates my answer for the next question, so I'll just keep going. If these teams meet in the AFC Championship game, as Brady and Manning teams tend to do, will the game be just as close? I'm going to say no. New England runs over Denver.
I have to agree with you. I'm feeling the same way.
I'm going to go with just 10 points, though, because I don't think Denver's defense will let it become a complete runaway. But I'm going to go with New England flattens them.
Yeah, I say this is going to be a one-score game. Whether that's a field goal or a touchdown, I think it's definitely going to be one score. It's going to be up to the Patriots defense. If you want to play sloppy and allow a guy who hasn't, you know, rushed like that all season long just completely walk up and down the field on you, then yeah, you're going to have some scary results. So for me, it's a one-score game. I say it's still in New England's favor. I think New England just has the better team. I just feel like, you know, when it comes to playoff season, the Patriots are just are more proven with more experience and more poise.
And exactly. And you're going to be trotting out either Peyton Manning, who's well past his prime and just got benched, right, or you're going to be trotting out the guy who replaced him, who wasn't able to get playing time in 3 years of the NFL. It's not too good either way for Denver. I think they just need to be happy and hope that someone knocks New England out so they don't have to face them if they make it to the AFC Championship. Let's jump over to the other conference now and look at some teams who right now might not be the best favorites for the championship game in the NFC. We're going to look at the Bears beating the Packers 17-13 and the Cardinals beating the 49ers 19-13. Now, the Packers and Cardinals earlier in the season looked like two of the best teams in the league and the two teams to beat in the NFC. Instead, the Packers just dropped one to the Bears, who are on the fringe of the wild card conversation. And the Cardinals were tested by the Niners, who are on the fringe of being the worst team in the entire NFL. So, we're going to look at these powerful sort of contenders. Which team looked weaker after their game? The Packers almost beating but losing to the Bears, or the Cardinals almost losing but beating the 49ers?
Dean, honestly, the team that looked a little bit weaker for me was the Green Bay Packers. And I'll tell you why. Although there was a lot of tension between the Cardinals and the 49ers this week, I thought this Packers game meant a lot more to Green Bay than the flip side of the 49ers and the Cardinals. Green Bay has a lot to play for right now. They're still chasing the outright divisional lead in the NFC North, and the Bears coming to Lambeau Field. So a lot of things are in the Packers' favor here. Unfortunately, the Packers just, you know, couldn't do anything in the second half. You hold a team scoreless in the second half, you're going to play well, and you're going to have a great chance of winning a football game. You can't stop scoring and then have that be the whole game for you. Rodgers only throwing one touchdown, and Jay Cutler also throwing one touchdown, so we have a really nice quarterback mixture. Nothing too crazy, although Aaron Rodgers did throw an interception, which I believe hurt them worse, you know, in terms of trying to win the game. But after the game, you could really see a lot of emotion on the sideline from the Green Bay Packers. I don't know if you looked over any of the footage, but Rodgers threw his helmet twice. Ha-Ha Clinton Dix also threw his helmet and got in the face of some of his other secondary members. Micah Hyde looked completely defeated. So I thought that took a lot more of a mental breakdown than the flip side of the coin that was over with the Cardinals and the 49ers. So for me, I'm going to say this was a worse loss for Green Bay. I think it hurt them more. I think they had every chance to, you know, be tied, and well, actually they would have been leading the division since the Vikings did lose to the Packers. So I think this game meant a lot more to Green Bay than it did. And I understand that teams have rough patches, you know, whether it's the Cardinals or the 49ers, you know, your opponent's still an opponent, and you know, these look like they should be blowaway wins on paper, but you know, these two teams are here to play, and you know, the game will run for money. But for me, Packers have the worst loss here.
See, I have to disagree with you. I think you made some great points about that, but I'm looking at it, the Packers, they lost, but they lost to a team that's only one game out of the wild card, whereas Arizona barely beat, and if we will talk about the referee calls later, but if
absolutely,
you factor those in, Arizona should have lost to a team that has the third worst record in the NFL and has looked horrible all season. So I have to say that Arizona coming out and losing to a team that has no place playing against Arizona is just a shame, whereas the Packers at least lost to a divisional rival who is in the wild card hunt. So I have to go with Arizona simply because they should not have won that game, and they were playing a far worse team than the Chicago Bears. But let's look at both of those teams as a whole. Did either team show weaknesses that should remove them from Super Bowl contention?
Absolutely. For me, I think the Packers defensively let the Bears run all over them, and not on the ground necessarily, but I just mean they let the Bears receivers go all over the place. Alshon Jeffrey had a fantastic day. So did Zach Miller. showed up when he had to. You got to cover these guys. Miller was wide open in the end zone for his touchdown reception. And honestly, I think for the Packers, you know, you got to get something going here. Rodgers has come out and said a few times that the defense isn't where they want it to be, isn't where it needs to be. And right now, it's hurt them. They've lost four out of their last five games. So, you know, something's going wrong here for Green Bay if they're trying to keep something consistently going. I think the Packers need to take a look at some of their defensive options. Rodgers playing great offensively, and Eddie Lacy showed up this week and the week before, having 200-yard games in 2 weeks now. So he was becoming a much better threat on the ground game for Green Bay. So I don't think it's the offense's fault, but Green Bay's got to do something about holding their opponents, you know, defensively.
And I've already removed Green Bay from my Super Bowl contention. Just looking at, they lost by 19 to the Broncos, who, putting up 10 against the Broncos is understood with the Broncos defense, but letting a shell of Peyton Manning put up 29, that's a problem.
Yep.
They lost to the Panthers, who are undefeated, so that's another good loss, especially because it was by 8.
Yep.
But then they drop one by 2 to the Detroit Lions, and that's where I'm just shaking my head.
At home as well.
Yeah, the 4-7 Lions, that 4-7 looks a lot better than what the Lions actually are. So dropping that one and then dropping this one to the Bears, I said the Bears were in the wild card discussion. They won't be for much longer. I think those two losses are a death knell. The Packers, if they make it to the Super Bowl, I would be thoroughly surprised. Whereas the Cardinals, I'm not ready to knock them out just yet because they only have one real threat in the NFC, and that's the undefeated Panthers. So the Cardinals are beneficiaries of circumstance in that the NFC is bad this year. So the only real team that they have to worry about is the Panthers right now. Sorry, Joe, I know the Vikings are up there, but I'm not ready to throw them into the discussion quite yet with how the Panthers and Cardinals have been playing.
Especially with the look of the Vikings' remaining schedule.
Exactly, and their less than semblance of a passing attack, but that's all issues for later on. I'm going to say that the Cardinals are still a Super Bowl contender, the Packers are out, and they need a lot of luck to make it that far. And speaking of teams that aren't Super Bowl contenders anymore, let's go completely off the realm of Super Bowl discussion and go to two bottom dwellers in the AFC, AFC North, actually.
Oh, boy.
Baltimore and Cleveland.
A true battle of the poops.
It was a battle of the poops. You are correct. The Ravens, 4-7, playing much worse, and the Browns, 2-9, and playing like the Browns that
Absolutely.
We've grown accustomed to. And they lost a quarterback for the season on top of that, so we don't know how that's going to go for the rest of the year.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk about just the ending of this game, and we're going to keep it lighthearted because we were watching it in our apartment on campus, and it was...
Let it be known that on the record, this was one of the most wildest reactions to a play I think I've seen our apartment have. It was...
That's because there was one Browns fan that we're a friend of that we were saying something's going to happen, the Browns will lose as they attempted a game-winning field goal.
And
he's saying, no, it's not going to happen. And then all of a sudden, everyone's cheering and he has his head in the couch. But just for those of you who might not know what we're talking about, the Browns are lining up for a game-winning field goal. As time expires, there's 3 seconds left. They kneel out the clock. They've set themselves up in the exact situation they wanted. They go to kick the field goal. It is blocked, and then two missed tackles later and a bunch of guys tripping over themselves, Baltimore scores, wins the game in regulation off of a game-winning field goal attempt by the other team. So we're going to go with recent NFL history. Let's say we'll throw it back 5 years. Is this the wildest ending to a game that we've seen in our last 4 or 5 years?
I don't want to say it's the wildest. However, me personally, this has to be the funniest.
Well, that's because of our circumstance and the fact that we were.
It's not the circumstance.
With a Browns fan when it happened.
That's true. Regardless of the Browns fan, in my mind, I just knew. I said to myself, in typical Cleveland fashion, something very Cleveland is going to happen. And like clockwork, it did. And I just thought it was hysterical that we were watching the Browns and all of their linemen literally trip over their own players and fall down, and no one even coming close to tackling the Baltimore Ravens special teams running back who's running that ball back. I forget his name. I apologize. But, yeah, it's definitely one of the funniest for me. Is it the wildest? I don't think it's the wildest, but it was a great way for the Ravens fans to be pumped up about a win on the road. So I'm going to say for me it was one of the funnier ones just because it's classic Cleveland. Keeping you in there all the way till they let you down.
I'm going to go with It was funny because of the circumstances we were in, watching it with a Browns fan and saying you're going to lose, and then it actually happened. But I say it's not the most exciting. I still think back to last year's NFC Championship between the Seahawks and Packers with the onside kick and Seattle coming out of nowhere to win and make it to the Super Bowl. So it's not the most exciting, but for a lighthearted change of pace, it was one of the funnier ones. I will give you that. And we threw that in as a fun discussion because we have a much less fun topic to discuss now, and that is the NFL concussion protocol issues that we've had with two quarterbacks in the last 2 weeks. And, you know, there's a concussion movie coming out that apparently the NFL wasn't too happy about on Christmas, so it's sticking with the theme that we're going to be talking about.
It's getting thrown into the mix, so.
Several weeks. I'll be going and seeing it.
I'll definitely go and see it just because I have a lot of interest in the NFL to start with. Exactly. It also looks pretty good.
It's also like our homework for the show. Yeah. Make sure we know what's going on. But for those of you who don't know, they put more concussion protocols in place after there was a lawsuit by former players, and it showed significant CTE damage in the brains of many retired players, some of whom unfortunately took their own lives due to mental issues. But Case Keenum, 2 weeks ago for the Rams, was rocked on a hard hit near the end of the game. One of his players tried to help him stand up, and he fell back down to the ground. Almost imagine like a newborn giraffe or deer or something that can't walk and struggling to stand under its own power. That was Case Keenum. They left him in the game. Everyone was screaming. He's probably too concussed to know where he is, but they left him in. The league ruled that there was no one individual party to blame, therefore no one's going to get in trouble, and the Rams escaped punishment for letting Case Keenum stay in a game he didn't know he was at, I think.
Yeah, and he had no right being in under center.
And this week, it wasn't as big a hit or as obvious a sign, but a similar situation with the Steelers and Ben Roethlisberger, who they might have let him play a little too long, and the league's evaluating how he goes through the concussion protocol this week if he's going to take the field next week against the Colts. So, as a whole, the NFL preaches player safety, player safety, player safety. We're trying to improve player safety, reduce concussions, reduce CTE in our retired players. But what's your take on the situation in that two quarterbacks with significant head issues might have been allowed to play through concussions in nationally televised games in the last 2 weeks?
Yeah, it's definitely something that's becoming a very, very popular topic, not just in professional sports, but in college sports as well. It is a serious health threat and a health risk in your future life. Obviously, you know, you can't play the game forever as much as everybody would want to, and it affects everybody down the road later in life. My personal take on it is I think it's scary. It's one of those things where you just can't take it lightly because you never know the effects of it. Even though you may not be showing any symptoms of concussion, there's probably some serious mental activity or some serious damage that could be going on within an individual. So it's very tough for a player to say, I'm fine, I'm ready to play, and him actually being fully recovered, he or she actually being fully recovered to the point where they can be on the field and play at the best of their ability. Yeah. Now, in the NFL, to answer your question, honestly, Dan, I want to see some sort of implication where you have to sit the bench for at least a week.
Well, you're supposed to with concussion. You're supposed to be pulled immediately.
I know,
I think that's where a lot of the issue is.
You're supposed to be pulled immediately, and that's fine because I've seen it happen this year when Teddy Bridgewater was knocked unconscious versus the Rams. He immediately sat out and was rushed to the locker room to undergo concussion protocol. So it happens all the time that these guys sit. I'm saying even if he does pass a whole week of concussion protocol, I still think that players should at least under their own power sit for a week. I think it's something that's really crazy. I have seen kids and family members get really, really, really messed up because of concussion. It's something you can't take lightly at all. And, you know, just to be out for 1 week just to rest and recover and fully take, you know, exams like the impact test, which is basically like a memory game, and things like that. That stuff needs to be taken extremely seriously because if it's not, and if it's even at least, you know, overshadowed in some way, it can have some serious effects.
It is, and I think multiple parties need to be embarrassed. The Steelers need to be embarrassed.
Absolutely.
That their own quarterback had to report his own concussion, which I applaud Ben Roethlisberger for doing that. That's what you're supposed to do as a player. I don't know how many of them actually do, but he had to report it himself. So good job by him. Bad job by the training staff, the concussion spotter, and everyone else who's assigned to player safety on the Pittsburgh Steelers for letting him stay in the game and making himself report it. And then the Rams, I think, should be heavily penalized for
there's just no excuse.
A complete lack of common sense and regard for a person's mental well-being.
It's almost unethical if you think about it.
It's unethical. It's embarrassing to the league. It's embarrassing to the Rams. And I think they should be one of the laughing stocks of the league for allowing a quarterback who didn't know where he was, or probably was pretty close to not knowing where he was after that hit, to stay in the game when TV cameras repeatedly showed him unable to stand and a teammate like dragging his limp body up and then letting go and watching him fall right back down to a sitting position. So the Rams, I think, should be heavily penalized. I don't know what the largest fine in league history is, but I think they should be pretty close to it, because if you're going to preach player safety, then you need to not be a hypocrite and you need to penalize someone for it instead of saying there's not one party to blame, we're not going to assess a fine on anyone. Now you fine, you demote the person who's a concussion spotter for the league who's at that game, and find the team and let them know that you're not allowed to do this, because Case Keenum is lucky that something serious extremely didn't happen with him still in there.
And maybe another hit like that does something even worse.
So. And he's going to play this week. He's trying to play this week. Whenever he's healthy, he's going to play again and start for the Rams. But there's a serious problem there, and the league should be incredibly scared, not only of the new movie that's coming out, but the real-life movie we saw on the field that was putting one player, and possibly two, depending on how bad Ben Roethlisberger's injury was, at serious risk for their long-term health, not just their health as a football player for this season. And we're going to go from one crisis to another. This one we've been talking about all year, and we've had some great arguments of it, especially when Bill was on the show, but that is bad officiating in the league. They can't spot concussions. They can't call plays. This is not a banner day for the NFL in our news section, but we saw it and we talked about two games, the Broncos-Patriots and the Cardinals-49ers, where official errors might have cost two different teams the game. The 49ers and Patriots have a right to be mad at the league, depending on whether or not you feel the refs made the right call. A lot of people don't. But we've been talking about bad calls all season. We had those. We had the KJ Wright fumble that sent Bill and I into an hour-long argument from the Seattle-Detroit game.
Say the poor Lions.
And depending on how you like some handling of some other calls, there's plenty you could pick from this season. Point is, the NFL has had a horrible year with officiating in the eyes of the public. Never have this many calls so early in the season been reported and just had this much of a public outcry, and the NFL is now trying to take action about it. But how bad is this NFL officiating crisis? Because I don't think either of us are going to disagree and say there isn't one.
Yeah, there is absolutely a crisis. I think as a football fan, you have to say that there is. You know, how many weeks have you and I just sat down and watched games together where we have no idea what they're even thinking when they're calling some of these? And you know, it is a judgmental thing, and it is all a matter of perception, but at the same time, there are so many cameras and different angles and different views that are available to make these calls and make them correctly. So I honestly feel like sometimes some of these referees are, you know, scared to say, we messed up, this, you know, should not be the call on the field. They stick with one call, they go with it, they take the repercussion from the public or from whoever, and they go with it. And then a lot of fans and a lot of people are genuinely upset, because I don't think that, you know, they're taking this, you know, as serious as they should, because we've seen it. We've talked about it. We've seen it where these cost games. These cost people games, potential seasons. And there's an absolute crisis. Last week, the Vikings and the Packers met in Minnesota, and it was the most heavily penalized game this year, with 19 flags being thrown total. And it coincidentally was the only game that Roger Goodell had been at all season
long. I'm glad you said that, because I was about to throw that little tidbit
right
in.
So think of that what you will. Is there a correlation? I don't know. Is someone trying to keep a job? I don't know. So a lot of it is, it's really, really sketchy, and something needs to be done in terms of the education for the referees to get these right. And, you know, you can't say there's not a crisis, because there is.
There is. I'm not going to go into potential conspiracies like you said with, I don't know if
I'm not going to
penalties because Roger Goodell was there. That's an issue for skeptics all over the internet to take over. But they do have a crisis. That is definite. We've argued that we had to argue every week and say, I wonder what the next issue is going to be.
Absolutely.
With which team is going to be cost a game and be upset about it is a shame, and it's tainting what used to be a higher level of competition, at least in the eyes of the public. So I'm going, they have a crisis. They need to start fixing it. And we've already seen one officiating crew suspended. They were supposed to work one game. I forget which two games. I just read about it before I walked in here.
I was say there's a game. There's a game this week where the refs were officially
one of the crews was pulled from one game and put on another one because of several missed calls and bad calls they've made on the season. But we're going to look. The NFL has mentioned a potential solution of breaking up, because how it works is the crews are together all season. They work. They're all together. The NFL's thinking of rotating them and having different crew members work with different people each week, so that way teams can't prepare and say, this crew calls more pass interference plays, so we're going to play a little softer in the secondary. They can't game plan for the refs. They'll be set with a random assortment of them. So is that the best solution, or is there a better one out there to fix what has been a horrible season of officiating?
I don't think it's the best solution, but it's something. It's something that they're at least going to put into place where maybe this can shine some light on some situations. I don't think there is a clear situation, Dan, and you want to know why? It's because there's still not even a definition for what a catch is, and it is 2015.
Now, that's just one example.
I know, but I'm just saying. It's one solution they're going to put in place. I think that's great that they're trying to show some initiative and do something. I think we have to see how that will play out to really kind of see how it'll affect the game. I don't think it's a bad thing to kind of throw some different ideas into the mix with a crew who should stand alone and say, I'm an NFL referee. I know what the proper call is. I think that's that you got to be on your honor, and you have to be, extremely headstrong to be able to make the calls that you do. So I think a group of guys who are coming together, who aren't on the same crew, are going to go right by the book because that's what they know best. They're not going to be influenced by one another. So I think it's a good strategy. You know, there's not a lot of things you can do, but I think it's okay.
I like the way you said it. You're like, it's not the best, but it's something. You sounded so defeated when you said it's something.
Because I will wait and see what happens.
I'm not positive.
Like, religiously. And, I just want to see something happen.
I'm not positive on this situation. You're right. It's something. That's a good way to describe it.
I don't know what to say.
If, for right now, for the time being, while they try to figure out why so many bad calls have been made, it's like the replacement refs are back out there this year.
Yeah, really.
But I don't know why so many bad calls have been made, but if they're going to rotate people, I want to see a complete self-destruction of the crews. I don't want, if you can somehow find a combination of people where no more than two people have worked together in the last few years on our officiating crew, I would do that. Just torpedo the operation, start over. Because the operation you have now is horrible, and it's rotting the game out from within.
Yeah, it's just getting ugly, and you don't want it to get any uglier.
I'm tired, and I'm sure other people are tired of playing the guessing game where they're trying to figure out which game's going to end in a controversial call with the wrong team announced the winner, or who's going to catch the pass that wasn't a pass, or is the ball going to be batted out of the end zone that should have been 15 yards, or whatever you want to do. Do a quick Google search. You'll find about 10 different rules and 10 different examples of plays that might be rehashed over the offseason. And we might do that ourselves. We don't know. But we're going to go ahead and do something as we head into our next break. When we come back, we're going to stop attacking different parties. And we're going to start picking games, picking some studs and duds, and helping out possibly another familiar friend of the show with his fantasy team. Kitchen's Corner will be right back on RMU Radio, your campus, your voice.
I took a walk around the world to ease my troubled mind. I left my body lying somewhere in the sands of time. But I watched the world float to the dark side of the moon. I feel there's nothing I can do. After all, I knew it had to be something to do with you. I really don't mind what happens now and then, as long as you'll be my friend at the end. If I go crazy, then will you still call me Superman? If I'm alive and well, will you be there holding my hand? I'll keep you by my side with my superhuman might, kryptonite. We'll be right back. granted all the times I never let you down. You stumbled in and bumped your head. If not for me, then you'd be dead. I picked you up, put you back on solid ground. If I go crazy, then will you still call me Superman? If I'm alive and well, will you be there holding my hand? I'll keep you by my side with my superhuman might, kryptonite.
Welcome back to this week's edition of Kitchens Corner, your RMU home for NFL debate and analysis. I'm your host, Dan Kitchen. Sitting across from me is Joe Peterson. And we're on after we went after some guilty parties in our news segment, which has been an unfortunate growing trend for us this year on the show. We're going to jump to a couple of fun segments now, our weekly Pick'em segment and Studs and Duds, where Studs and Duds will pick one player who succeeded and one player who did not do as well for their teams. And then Pick'em, of course, is exactly as it sounds. We're going to pick who we think will win some key games. This week is a special wild card edition of Pick'em, where all of the games are going to be between two teams that are in the thick of the wild card race in their respective conferences. Going over our standings, we had two people on the bad side of 500. Our one-week co-host, Ryan DeBee, came on for Pick'em and went 1-2 with picks such as San Francisco over Seattle. Still one of the biggest shockers we've had.
Yeah, still a bold call even to this day.
Bill Scott, who is currently in a master's class, so we can't fault him for not being here. He will be back next semester. He went 5-7 in his weeks on the show. And then we have a three-game gap between Joe and myself. Joe sitting at 11-7 and myself at 14-4. Both of us coming off of 2-1 weeks, where we picked against each other heavily. This week we're doing four games for the first time all season, and we're going to start off with the Indianapolis Colts at the Pittsburgh Steelers. The Colts are tied for their division lead with a team that's in the wild card that we will talk about later, and the Steelers are tied but not currently in one of the two wild card spots, as many teams are sitting at that 6-5 record in the AFC. So Colts at Steelers. Joe, we'll let you open this one up. Who do you have?
I like this matchup. I think it's going to be a great game. Depending on whether Roethlisberger plays or not, if in his concussion protocol, it's going to definitely be great to see that in the mix. But for me, I'm going to give this one to the Pittsburgh Steelers. I like the Steelers at home. I think that adds an extra element to the game. Pittsburgh plays really well at home, and if they can keep these receivers just going, you know, great like they are, I think the Steelers will be a good threat against the Colts. All they got to do is contain the Colts on the ground with Frank Gore and, you know, make Hasselbeck throw when he can. But honestly, right now, I like this matchup for the Steelers.
I also am going to have to go with the Steelers as well, just because Ben Roethlisberger probably will be back. He said himself he doesn't think he has a concussion. The Steelers say otherwise, and they're putting him through the regimen anyway. But I assume he will be back, and if so, the Steelers will probably beat the Colts, who have a not-too-good secondary, and the Colts are still using Matt Hasselbeck as a game manager. And it's good, but they've also been facing some softer opponents like Tampa Bay. So I'm going to go ahead and say the Steelers win this one, but I don't think it's going to be a runaway. Jump to stay in the AFC. We're going to go AFC West, Kansas City Chiefs at the Oakland Raiders. Division rivals, the Raiders are a game out of the wild card, while Kansas City currently holds the first of two wild card spots in the AFC with a 6-5 record. So, Chiefs at Raiders. I'll go ahead and start with this one just so we can keep going back and forth, and you can't accuse me of picking with or against you at my leisure, as Bill was prone to do when he was here.
He was prone.
Well, he was paranoid because when he loses more games, he looks for a way to claw back into the standings.
Got to find some way to get out of it.
But Chiefs at Raiders, I'm going to go with the Kansas City Chiefs because the Raiders' receivers have been handled by good secondaries, of which the Chiefs have one of the better ones with Marcus Peters breaking out as a rookie and Eric Berry returning from leukemia and dominating on the field like his usual self. So I'm going to say the Chiefs continue their hot streak, shut down the Raiders' passing game, which has been the way they've stayed in games this season. Chiefs over Raiders on the road.
All right, looking at this game, it's a tough matchup. I think both of these teams are going to play well. I don't think this is a runaway for either, but I also like the Kansas City Chiefs in this one. I think the Chiefs will play really, really well. I like their defense more than I like the Oakland Raiders' defense. They've been relying pretty heavily on Derek Carr, as you had mentioned. Carr's been playing great for them this year. But Latavius Murray's been average at best on the ground, and I know they mix Olawale in there to kind of show some variety, but I really think that the Kansas City Chiefs have this one. Alex Smith was looking great last week, made some awesome plays to Jeremy Maclin down the field, and that was the first time I think I've ever seen the Chiefs throw a touchdown. So I was pretty impressed by it, and I think Alex Smith's going to stay on this hot streak, and I say he wins this one in Oakland.
All right, and we're going to jump now to the only matchup all season where there is not an away team. The New York Jets are at the New York Giants. So
the New York Jets versus the New York Jets, and the New York Giants versus the Giants.
And there you go. You have both New York teams playing each other, so they're both going to have home field advantage. And we're going to say, battle in New York. The Jets are the best team, not in the AFC playoffs right now, and the Giants are tied for Washington in the NFC East in what is becoming the most likely team to send a losing record team to the playoffs with an automatic bid. So, Jets at Giants or Giants at Jets, however you want to look at it. Joe, who wins the Battle of New York?
For the Battle of New York, I think I might have to give this one to the Jets. I think, you know, Darrelle Revis is going to be over. Odell Beckham Jr. is going to be really, really key for this game. They have to lock him down. He's been playing great, and he made another tremendous catch this past week. And I like the Jets' running game as much as I do their passing game. I think Ryan Fitzpatrick is a fine quarterback. I don't think he's, you know, anywhere, you know, where he shouldn't be. I think he's been doing great. Brandon Marshall is going to be tough to cover, no matter who you put on him. And I like the Jets in this one. I think they'll hold strong, and if the Jets can just contain Eli Manning and, you know, some of his receiving core, I think they'll win this one.
I'm going to go with a complete gut pick here and disagree with you for the first time in this and say the Giants, because Darrelle Revis is still going through the concussion protocol, and it's taking him longer than many thought, which means he might not be there. And if he's not on Odell Beckham Jr., Odell Beckham Jr. is going to be a nightmare for the Jets.
Absolutely.
And even if he is back, he's probably going to be a little under 100%, which means Odell Beckham Jr. still will probably be a nightmare for the Jets. So I'm going to go just the Jets. Giants seem to play up to their competition.
They play
bad when they play bad teams, and they play great when they play great teams, as evidenced by when they almost knocked off New England a few weeks ago when they were still undefeated. So I'm going to say the Giants play up to the Jets' level. Darrelle Revis is out or partially injured while he plays, and the Giants will win. And this might be the least close of the four games we're picking.
I think so, too.
Just on a hunch. Last game we have the Texans at the Bills. Their wild card credentials. The Texans are just scraping in with the last AFC playoff spot, currently tied with Indianapolis for the division lead, and one of about 20 teams in the AFC that are at a 6-5 record. Buffalo is a game out of the AFC wildcard picture at 5-6, but there's still enough time in the season that a couple of wins and a little bit of help, and they are right back into the thick of things. And the Bills are another one of those teams, like the Giants, who have played at a similar level to their competition, playing up when New England shows up and playing down when Miami does. So, Texans at Bills. Joe, who do you have?
I'm going to go with the Texans on this one, Dan. I think they have all the variety and all the right mixtures of great offensive looks that they need. And I think that, You know, if J.J. Watt shows up and he becomes a weapon like he has been all season and really puts some pressure on Tyrod Taylor, make him scramble, make him throw those tough plays, I think they can do really, really well defensively. And I also like the fact that they're really, you know, finding a quarterback rhythm and finding DeAndre Hopkins with those great routes. And I like that. Alfred Blue in the mix. So, again, I like the Texans rolling right now. I think they're playing really well as a team, and I see them winning this game.
For the sake of the show and because I just made another gut decision, I'm going to disagree again and say the Buffalo Bills will beat the Houston Texans because the Bills are at home and they have one of the better defenses in the league. Houston doesn't have a good running back situation right now, which the Bills have been stopping great running backs, so they should be more than able to handle the Texans running backs. And then the Texans are still iffy at quarterback, and the Bills secondary led by Stephon Gilmore is doing a great job this season, or at least Gilmore has been. So because the Texans offense is based around DeAndre Hopkins and DeAndre Hopkins only, I'm going to go ahead and say that the Buffalo Bills will escape with a close victory over the Houston Texans this week, leaving of our four games, two of them we disagreed on, so there's a chance to make up some ground in this pick 'em segment.
Absolutely. There's plenty of time left.
Oh, there's plenty of time. Only two shows left in the semester, though.
That's true.
So,
but thank goodness for all of you listeners. We will be here next semester as well.
We will. We will have Bill back, and once the basketball season is over, we might have Casper back for the first four-man crew we've had on here.
That would be a wonderful treat for all of you guys, because it's going to be nothing but debates.
And we'll probably get to maybe two arguments a show, because once... I know Bill and Casper always seem to be the ones who like to incite the debate, and then we just roll with it, but once all four of us are in here, that could lead to some fun arguments.
Absolutely. It's especially good outlooks.
Good way to close out next semester, but that's thinking a semester ahead. We're going to think to our next segment, which is Studs and Duds. We each have one player who really helped his team win this week and deserves to be recognized for it, and we have one player who deserves to be recognized for the exact opposite. Joe, I don't care if you start with dessert or go with the vegetables first. Give us one of your players you recognized and tell us if it's a good or a bad one.
All right, Daniel, I'll go with the stud for the week just because, you know, you always want to highlight the guys who shined during the week.
You always start with dessert first.
Absolutely. And if I could have a brownie for dinner, absolutely I would. And I can. So the best part about this week was my stud. I thought he played fantastic. I really thought he helped home down this win for the San Diego Chargers, and that is going to be Phillip Rivers. I think he looked great this week at quarterback, made some fantastic throws, throwing four touchdowns this week, two of them to one of his favorite hookups, Antonio Gates. Those two legendary in the red zone. So I thought he played great. No interceptions. He made some fantastic passes. Looked like an all-star quarterback, and he's been playing fantastic all season, so this goes to Phillip Rivers.
All right, I'll go with my stud, and I'll keep it at the quarterback position as well. I'm going to recognize Russell Wilson of the Seattle Seahawks coming up against, yeah, you were complaining about, didn't he put up 45 points on you this week?
Oh, he sure did, Dan.
Going up against,
single-handedly defeated me.
Going up against the Steelers, he needed a great performance because both whoever won this game was going to be into the playoff picture for right now, and whoever lost was going to be out of it. So he goes into Pittsburgh and ends up going... Actually, he did not go into Pittsburgh. It was in Seattle. But the Steelers came in with a tough challenge, and he comes out 21 for 30, 345 yards, and five touchdowns.
Yeah.
Count him five. This is a quarterback who's not known for throwing the ball. It's more hand off to your running backs and get out of the way and let defense do the work. But Wilson comes out, throws five scores, helps the Seattle Seahawks get back into the top six in the NFC, and faces a tough and sneaky challenge in the Steelers. So I'm going to go ahead and say Russell Wilson gets my stud of the week. All right, Joe, bring on the veggies. What do you have for us on your dud of the week?
I have a bunch of eels coming your way, Dan. We know we want to ride the escalators.
A bunch of them.
Just one, though. But my dud, and I know you're going to say this because I've said it before, oh, he was injured, whatever, but my dud for the week is Tony Romo.
I'm not going to defend Romo here.
Throwing,
go for it.
Throwing up a pitiful performance this week, throwing two interceptions to the same linebacker, Luke Kuechly.
On back-to-back offensive plays.
On back-to-back offensive drives. I was getting there.
Oh, no, plays. It wasn't even drives. It was plays. He ended one drive and started another one.
Absolutely. It was that bad. He played terrible. Yes, he did end up getting injured, re-breaking the same collarbone that he has broken the last two seasons. Romo might be playing some of the worst football that he's been playing. He didn't look bad against the Dolphins, but this was just a pathetic performance. And, yeah, not good. Not good. Especially because now all of the Cowboys' playoff hopes have been silenced.
There weren't many to begin with once he went down early in the season.
Oh, yeah.
Right after Dez Bryant did, so... No, it wasn't good. I'm going to sort of encompass that and go a little bit beyond that and say Thanksgiving Day football was a complete dud.
Oh, boy.
Because I turned on after the Macy's Day Parade, I fought with my family and said, you know what? We don't need to watch the dog show.
We should drive up to Joe's house and watch Red Zone.
yes, I'm going to do that over Christmas break. Don't worry. But Thanksgiving, I argued. I said, you know what? It's going to be more exciting than a dog show. Let's put on Thanksgiving Day football. I won my case, and then I get to see the Lions embarrass the Eagles by halftime end up 45-14. And you know what? I thought, you know what? Undefeated Panthers play next. Cowboys always do well on Thanksgiving. Let's go for it. And then it's 33-14. I'm thinking I'm 0-2. These games haven't been exciting. My family hates me. And then I come out and say, you know what? The Packers will redeem it. And then there's a good game, and then the Packers lost at the end, and it at least that one was a good game, even though the team that was favored didn't win, so we saw an upset. But Thanksgiving Day football, they showed three games, and only one of them was an actual game.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to say Thanksgiving Day football was a dud, not because the teams should have intentionally kept it close, just because circumstance happened to have it that two of the three games ended in blowouts. So not really attacking anyone with my dud, just stating an unfortunate fact. Going to go ahead into our second of... Actually, I just realized something. We only have one segment left, so I played the wrong song. We always end it with... We always end our last break with Let It Ride by Bachman Turner Overdrive. That was an error on my part. We're keeping this show and then possibly next week's, depending on what time we get out of our finals and how many we have left. We're keeping them a little shorter because it is finals week and we are taking our hardest classes this semester. At least I am, and judging by Joe's reaction, he has been as well. So we're going to be keeping the shows a little bit shorter. We apologize. We will be back after the short break. That sounds a lot better. We'll be back after a short break with fantasy help and possibly a question from one of our viewers and a draft preview. We're starting to look ahead to the NFL draft, even though it's months away. And we'll be talking about one team who might need a little bit of help at the start of the draft. Kitchen's Corner will be right back on RMU Radio, your campus, your voice. Let it ride. Where are you? And welcome back to the final few minutes of this week's edition of Kitchen's Corner, your RMU home for NFL debate and analysis. I don't know why Joe is dancing over there like that.
Double guns, man.
Double guns. I don't know why you're celebrating, but we'll let you go with that. It's, again, shorter, as we explained before the break, because we have finals to be studying for.
We are adults,
and
yes.
We are adults. We do have to do some finals, so depending on next week when our finals are and if the hard ones are out of the way, we might be back for our full 2 hours. We might even have Bill Scott on the show, depending on if he has a final for that class or not at the same time as his regular class. So that's all up in the air. We'll discuss it later. But we're on now to our fantasy help and draft preview section. We'll go to draft preview first. I guess we make a habit out of closing the show with fantasy. So last show on our draft preview, we talked about the top five teams in the league, or the worst five teams, top five picks in the draft, and said which ones might go for a full-on rebuild. This week, we had an interesting debate in our apartment last night while we were watching the football game, and we're going to go ahead and bring it out now, because there were some pretty creative points brought up by all the people around, and I wish we could have some of them on the show this week to discuss those, but it's all about the Cleveland Browns, and here's the question that, the two-part question that everyone was arguing with each other, and all of them had good points. If Cleveland ends up with the first overall pick, do they go quarterback and initiate a rebuild? And if so, which quarterback do they pick? Now, we had some people who said that they don't even need to go quarterback. So, Joe, we'll start with that issue on itself. Yeah. Cleveland ends up with the top overall pick. It's an ever-increasing likelihood. Do they go quarterback, or should they? Should they go quarterback?
Listen, I think if Cleveland goes quarterback, they're just going to put themselves in this loop that they have been in with this, let's just get a quarterback and start him with our Swiss cheese line and hope that he does stuff.
They don't have a Swiss cheese line. Joe Thomas is great. Alex Mack's the best center in football.
Their line is not bad, but they just...
call it Swiss cheese.
No, I know, but these quarterbacks always seem to get hurt in some fashion, and it really hurts the Browns later in the season. I'm not saying it's their fault. I'm just saying something's going on here where these guys are just getting,
It's not Swiss cheese line. It's paper bones and glass skin.
Well, yeah, and
I'm sorry, I got that backwards. Glass bones and paper skin.
Right. So if they go quarterback, honestly, I think the fans are tired of going quarterback. These guys are. I mean, yes, they're desperate for some wins, and they want.
They're not tired of going
around.
Quarterback. They're tired of losing.
Well, they are tired of losing, and part of it is because they've had, I don't know, 15 starting quarterbacks in the last 10 years.
Oh, we have to check that famous jersey with all of them listed going down.
Oh,
but it is
absolutely.
I think it's closer to 20.
Absolutely, and I don't want it to be another statistic and just throw one more in there. I say they avoid going quarterback first.
Are you saying that's what they should do, or that's what they're going to do?
I say they should avoid getting a quarterback first.
So you're saying they need to. So what would they do then if they don't go quarterback? Do they double down on Johnny Manziel or Josh McCown or Austin Davis?
I think they honestly need to look for some receiver help. These guys need great route runners to throw the ball to. You look at the Cleveland Browns and you're like, what weapons do they have? I mean, they have guys that are good. Don't get me wrong. I think they're all good.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know. But they're in the NFL for a reason, so they're good. But you look at some of these guys and you're like, where's like the talent? Where's the X factor in these like offensive guys? I don't see any. And I think they could use some receiver help. They have great tight ends. I think their tight ends play really well. I think they're well coached in the tight end position. But I think they need some receiver help for sure. They need to be able to move the ball.
See, I have to disagree with you. Not that they need receiver help, because they needed receiver help, and they should somehow get another first-round pick this year so they could use get a receiver. But they need to go quarterback here. Josh McCown is old. I know it's a loop. I understand that every 2 years it's...
We're stuck in a time loop. We are over here stuck in a time
they've
loop.
They've been stuck in a time loop for a decade. Every couple years. Every couple years, get rid of the head coach, get rid of the quarterback, gut the team, go again.
And start 2-9 all over.
It never works. I think the problem is they're drafting quarterbacks at the 22nd pick. They've drafted three of them, and none of them have worked out. Brandon Whedon, horrible in Dallas. Brady Quinn, out of the league. Johnny Manziel, I'll get to him in a second.
Yeah, we'll get to him.
The problem is they're drafting them at 22. Those guys are falling because every other team in the league knows they're not worth it.
They don't need them.
And Cleveland snaps them up because why pick a quarterback
because
at number one
Cleveland.
When you can pick him at 22? No, if they get the first overall pick, they need to cut ties with Johnny Manziel, who has been an embarrassment as a representative of the NFL and the organization, And apparently now he's lying to the team about going out and partying on bye weeks. No, they need to get rid of him, cut ties with him, let some other team deal with his headache. And he has the potential to be a quarterback, but he also has the potential to be an off-the-field nightmare, which he has been in Cleveland. So I'm saying Cleveland needs to cut ties with him if they get the first pick. I don't know if you have to get rid of the coach and go full on rebuild. Get a quarterback with the first pick, not the 22nd pick, and go after. My pick here would be Jared Goff out of California, just because of his high ceiling. I have him. It's all semantics. You could go Paxton Lynch or Connor Cook as well.
Oh yeah, Connor Cook would be a good spot here.
Any three of those guys, what I think would be an improvement for the Browns franchise over Johnny Manziel, because at least they can keep themselves out of trouble off the field.
And they can see over the line.
Exactly. Well, I can't believe I let you just make a short joke. I should have foreseen that.
It's all right. I mean, you look at Drew Brees, and he's successful.
Exactly. I should have foreseen that, because every time we talk about this impromptu, you make that joke. But no, I'm saying... And we'll ask you the second part. Even though you said stick with the quarterback and you were fighting for that, I'll ask you the same question. Say you had decided to go, they need to rebuild. Which of those three quarterbacks would you have said?
I probably, if they needed to rebuild and they're looking for the quarterback position, for me, I'm going to take Connor Cook or the kid from California. I forget his name.
Jared Goff.
Yes, Jared Goff. I think they're great. They're stand-tall pocket quarterbacks who can sling the ball deep, and I think that's awesome. I think Goff has the advantage in the NFL over Cook because he can throw the ball deep. I don't see Cook as being the deep threat that, you know, people see in quarterbacks in the league like Roethlisberger or, you know, guys of that caliber who can just, you know, sling a football like Andrew Luck. And I think that they want to take either Goff or Cook because they're stand tall guys, great pocket presence there. They're great at, you know, with vision and finding not the one man but the two receiver and working through their progression. I watched this kid play at Michigan State the last 4 years. I follow the Big Ten a lot. And this kid from California is turning out to be as good as Aaron Rodgers looked. So I think that, you know, this is a good decision for him. I'd say they can't go wrong with either.
I don't know if I go as far as he looked as good as Aaron Rodgers looked. There's errors.
He's getting up there.
There's a crucial flaw with Alden. Connor Cook hasn't looked like an effective leader at Michigan State at times. I'd say he's third. Paxton Lynch I have second because he looks more NFL ready, but he played at Memphis. So his level of competition is much less than Goff, who has a lot of work to do but has the highest ceiling of the three. I'm saying they need to go with Goff. They need to not ease him in, because when they ease him in, that's how quarterbacks get buried and abandoned after 2 years, and that's how the time loop repeats itself again.
The time loop.
I'm saying let Josh McCown or someone, I'd say get a better veteran mentor than Josh McCown this offseason.
Matt Castle. His job could be up for grabs. They bring him in, and they just show him that, you know,
you can still be a quarterback.
You know what's funny is I muted you halfway through that, because as soon as you tried to start justifying Matt Castle, I'm like, no. No, we're gonna stop there. Your mic's back on, so behave yourself. But
absolutely, I just think that Cleveland, whatever they do, they need to take a serious look at what they want to have on the field. And if they decide quarterback, they got to be smart, like you said, draft high, draft aggressive. You can't wait until, you know, you're
the 22nd pick for a quarterback that 21 other teams passed on because they know that he's not worth it. But I'm gonna say Goff, but go with any of the three of them. Just pick him at number one. Unless one of them shows telltale signs being a bust, in which case, don't pick them.
Yes.
It's all semantics. You can work deal with that at your own leisure.
Wheel them and deal them.
Exactly. And now we're going to go to our last segment now, fantasy advice. Usually we have a segment or a question from our loyal listener, Corey, one of Joe's friends from work, but Corey actually just accepted a position in Atlanta, I was informed by Joe, so we would like to extend our show's congratulations to him. And hope that once he's settled in down in the ATL, he's willing to send us in some more questions. If he's still, do you know if he's in his playoff picture or is he out of it?
I am not sure. I'll have to get a hold of him and find out and keep everybody on their toes.
If he's out of the playoffs, we might not be getting questions for too much longer from him this season.
That's true.
But
I think he's in good standing in his league, though.
All right. In that case, we might be getting questions deep into the playoffs. But since we don't have a question, we're going to double down on our waiver wire advice. And we're going to say, pick two different positions and give us waiver wire help at each position. So, Joe, let's have one of yours now.
All right. I'm going to give you guys one that, you know, you can probably do this on your own if you watch football and you're a big fan. But Pick up Scott Chandler if he's still available. Rob Gronkowski has gone down. He thought he might have had a torn ligament. Not sure of what his situation would look like. But as of right now, he's looking for limited field time at practice and could be extremely questionable.
He will be out this week.
This coming week. So look for Scott Chandler. He's a great tight end to replace him. Brady loves throwing the ball to guys who are extremely tall. And
he loves throwing it to tight ends.
Absolutely.
Those are his number one targets.
So if you're looking for some tight end help and he's still available, absolutely grab Scott Chandler. It's going to be a great win for you.
Yeah, that's exactly. That was my first pick as well until you sniped him from me. But I'll go ahead and switch to my backup first pick, and that is David Johnson from Arizona. Chris Johnson is out for several weeks, and Andre Ellington is out with turf toe for at least this week, so David Johnson already found a way to score a lot of touchdowns as a rookie. He's now getting the chance to start completely, and I don't think Stephon Taylor is worth that many carries, and I think Arizona knows that. So I'm saying David Johnson, pick him up. He's good for at least 1 week of starting, probably more because I expect him to do very well this week. Joe, what's your other fantasy pickup for this week?
All right, my other fantasy pickup for this week is going to be the wide receiver position, and it's going to be Cecil Shorts III. Texans are really kind of trying to turn this offense around, and Cecil Shorts has been, you know, an implemental part of that. He's been great within the slot. They've run some end-arounds with him because of his speed. Also getting some looks down the field as well, coming up with 12 catches in just 2 weeks. So if you're looking for targets in the PPR and you need another receiver, especially because the Texans are going to have a tough matchup this week against a good secondary, and Hopkins might be covered, Cecil Shorts might be more available and more open. So look for Cecil Shorts if he's available in your league and pick him up for some wide receiver depth.
I'll give you a second wide receiver to look for. It's a name that I bit into heavily at the beginning of the year thinking he would step up and for an injured player, and instead he waited till now to start breaking out. Devin Funchess from Carolina. Draft him in every league thinking, you know what, he has to replace Kelvin Benjamin, he has the most upside of any receiver, and instead he got buried on the depth chart. Well, now he's starting to make his way back up, and he's getting more targets than number one receiver Ted Ginn at Carolina, and he's caught touchdowns recently. So he's on a little bit of a hot streak. He's not probably not going to get you as many points, but if you need someone for just a week because of an injury concern, or you want someone that you can stash on your bench so other teams at least can't have him and you can possibly use him later in the season for like the last couple rounds of the playoffs, go ahead, go for it. He's getting some of the targets and it's likely going to grow, especially because Carolina is the best team in the NFL this season. It's all the time we have for this week on Kitchen's Corner. And I'm actually, you know what, Joe, you did pretty well closing the show 2 weeks ago. I'm going to let you close it out again.
All right. Due to technical difficulty a few weeks ago, Dance Mike was cut short just at the ending address here. So I'll pick it up for him because he gave me the honor this week. But that's all the time we have today for Kitchen's Corner, your RMU host for NFL debate and analysis. I am not Dan Kitchen. We are looking forward to coming back for you next week during finals. But thanks again for listening to RMU Radio, your campus, your voice.